Just continuing the rep what we're asking him to accomplish, understanding formations. You know, you're not game planning, so you're not really recognizing formations, recognizing tendencies as we go. But at the same time, just from a man coverage standpoint, being able to win your one-on-ones when those one-on-ones are presented, there's never panic. But is there urgency? There's always urgency from the second we stepped on the football field till the day the season's over. There's going to be urgency to try to get better.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast presented by Prize Picks. More on that in a little bit. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me, back from his vacation, the one and only Justin Mello. Justin, how you doing on this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing well, doing well. Of course I'm doing well, doing well. Fresh off of vacation. Happy to be back in the saddle here on the Music City Audible on this lovely Monday morning. I missed a whole lot, but the second I arrived back on Friday afternoon, I went and watched Thursday night's preseason game. I'm up to date on everything. We had a Saturday practice. We had a practice just end now on Monday, and I am thrilled to be back talking Tennessee Titans ball.
Hell yeah, we're happy to have you back, Justin. We missed you a lot. We got some updates for the Audible Army today. We will cover the Discord and the Fantasy League and all that stuff a little later on this week. We have a ton of stuff to talk about today, so not going to waste time on the... We got people in here who really want us to talk about the Discord and all that. I promise you, we'll have the Discord up and running before Sunday's preseason game so we can really kick things off with a fun live chat going on there. But yes, as you mentioned, Titans practice on Saturday. Titans practice again on Monday. Just a few moments ago, practice wrapped up. Thought it was not an open practice to fans, so I thought we would have to wait a while to get the practice notes, but they were flooding the timeline as soon as practice started. So we have a lot to talk about. Definitely want to talk about Saturday. Get a little bit of your thoughts, Justin, on the preseason game, just because, you know, it's old news now, but just because you didn't get a chance to share any thoughts. And we can kind of weave those in as we have other conversations here, because I want to talk about, obviously, Cam Ward bouncing back big time at practice on Saturday, continued that momentum into practice today. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. Concerns with the secondary. Seems like the Titans fan base is on full and total meltdown panic mode after three drives of preseason football, which is completely and totally wild to me. So I'm going to try to assuage some of that panic. Got a solid quote I'm going to play. We got a lot to talk about here. And then a right guard battle update, Justin, because you and I, you know, we were texting when you got back from Portugal that we might have to eat a little crow because Fernando Carmona, who we declared totally out of the competition because he's a rookie early on in training camp, seems like we were big time wrong about that. In fact, on Friday's show with Ryan Watson sitting in for you, I played the fight bell and declared the battle over. End it before somebody gets hurt because Fernando Carmona's got this thing wrapped up. But we'll talk about all of that, starting with Saturday's practice where Cam Ward was absolutely on fire. His best day of training camp, Jim Wyatt called it, completed 21 of 25 passes, a number of touchdowns. In fact, 5 touchdown passes in Saturday's practice, which, like, I remember talking to you, Justin, about early on in camp. We were saying, like, Cam Ward hasn't had one of these days where he just, like, goes off for 5 touchdown passes. That seems a little crazy to do in a training camp practice. Well, he's done it. Multiple tosses to Elik Iamanner, 2 to Carnell Tate. I mean, Carnell Tate's 0 catches on 3 targets from preseason week 1 looks paltry in comparison to what he did at Saturday's practice. So, I don't know. How you feeling after watching the game, after watching Ward and the first team offense struggle a bit, aside from leading, you know, a 95-yard touchdown drive, which is pretty dang impressive, and then bouncing back strong in these last two practices? What's your thought process right now?
I'm not surprised that he bounced back on Saturday because He strikes me as the type of guy who is probably pretty ticked off about how he played on Thursday evening against the 49ers. I don't think anyone's harder on him than he is on himself. And we're not going to sugarcoat it. I didn't watch, obviously, but I imagine you and Brian didn't sugarcoat it. He didn't play well on Thursday, right? He was 5 of 12 under 50% completion percentage. He missed like 3 or 4 throws that he should have completed for sure. There was the swing to Wandale Robinson. There was the simple out route to Carnell Tate. I thought Robinson dropped that slot route, like, where he put a lot of mustard on. I thought you needed to throw that with the velocity he threw it with based on how tight the window was. And I thought Robinson should have caught it. But then there was also the disastrous, you know, intentional grounding that, let's be honest, was Will Levis like, you know, kind of just drifting into his own end zone and not, you know, getting himself into trouble. So he played very poorly on Thursday. That's just the matter of the situation. But he bounces back on Saturday.
He also missed Elikai Emanuel on that slant route, which was the other, like, very clear and obvious miss. And Justin, we talked about this on Friday, Ryan and I, but the game was late on Thursday night. Friday morning, we're live streaming at 10:30 a.m. Like, it takes a little bit of time to prep the show. I was cutting a ton of clips that we played on that show, so I didn't have a chance to really go back and watch the All 22 until after Friday's stream. I have further thoughts now after that, after watching the All 22. To me, everything that has been said about Cam Ward being sped up explains all of his misses. The swing to Wandale Robinson is on an RPO play, and it looks like he makes that decision to pull the ball out of the running back's gut and throw it to Wandale at the last second. And it looks like he's just trying to throw the ball as fast as a human being can throw the ball. And it was one of the things that we've talked about on his Miami tape that he was really impressive at, was on those RPOs, being able to go from looking like you're handing it off to the ball is out. Instantly. He just did it too quickly to get the ball on target to Wandale. On the out route to Carnell Tate, he's sped up. If he waits like a quarter of a second to release that out route, it's going to hit Tate right in the hands, right at the sideline. And on the slant to Iron Manor, same thing. He just needed to wait for because there's a zone window on the Iron Manor one. He throws it before Iron Manor clears the linebacker. So again, it's a timing issue more than an accuracy issue. Like, I really think the ball went where Ward was intending on the out route and the slant route. He just threw it too quickly. And on the Wandale out swing pass, he threw it too quickly, and he threw it so quickly on that one that he missed the throw completely. So to me, it's like, just calm down and take a breath and don't rush everything, and he'll be totally fine.
I think you and I are in complete agreement, because when you watch the All 22, you watch the tape, which I've actually had a chance to go back and do this weekend, and a lot of people were in agreement on social media. I do think it's a timing issue, right? He certainly sped up. I think the whole offense had a timing issue. And in truth, if you're looking for positives, that's the best kind of issue to have this time of year, right? Like, that's the kind of stuff you got to work out the kinks on. And maybe they play more in the next preseason game. I mean, they've got another joint practice coming up against the Super Bowl defending champions, who have a really good defense, on Friday, the Seattle Seahawks. So, good issue to have this time of year, but certainly, you know, you're on a clock and you've got to start, you know, figuring it out.
So at Saturday's practice, where he did bounce back strong, Paul Kaharsky was out there at practice. And, you know, as I do on every show like this, Justin, shout out to the beat writers covering these practices for us so we get a chance to talk about it. But Paul tweeted, Cam Ward did some very good things today in bouncing back from San Francisco. On one two-play drive, he hit Elikai Emanuel for a mid-range catch and run versus Flaunt, then a bomb to Emanuel wide open versus busted coverage on Alante Taylor's side for a 73-yard touchdown. But it felt like Ward started slow and cautious, almost playing slow in response to playing too fast versus the 49ers. Looped some screens, held the ball too long, and took some sacks. So it looks like he was fully aware of what caused his issues in Thursday night's game, was working hard to, like, correct those issues, or maybe even focusing too much and overcorrecting those issues, and then settled in for the rest of practice, and was, from then on, was outstanding by all accounts in Saturday's practice. So I think that's what you want to see from your starting quarterback. Understand why you were where you were wrong. Try to make those things that you were wrong better. And another point on all this, Justin, that gets lost in everything is the fact that it's a preseason game. They only played three drives. I mean, how many times last year did Cam Ward come out in the first quarter, have a couple drives that you're like, oh, I don't know if he's got it today. And then by the second half, you're like, this is our franchise quarterback. Obviously, he didn't get that chance in a preseason game, because after three drives, he's done. So he doesn't have a chance to sit on the sideline, have Shea Tierney come over or Brian Daboll or somebody come over and say, hey, Cam, you're really sped up right now. Like, you need to just take a breath, settle down, go through your process, trust your protection, get back out there and make some plays. And maybe he would have done that if he'd had a chance to. But the lasting impression coming out of the game was all the misses. So that's why I also think the overreaction panic went into full-blown overdrive. I also think Tyler Rowland, Tic Tac Titans, Locked On Titans, had a really good point on this, which is, like, if you came into this training camp thinking Ward's going to go prove himself to be the guy, then you're not reacting very strongly to this preseason game. If you came into training camp thinking Ward's got to show me something or I'm going to declare him a bust, then you're hanging everything on the evidence of that preseason game. Nobody's opinion is changing. You're just digging in more strongly to whichever side you felt before the preseason game even happened. And I think that that is spot on.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's early days still, right? August 17th, they've had one preseason game, one joint practice. We'll see what it looks like this week. Obviously, we just wrapped up a Monday practice where we've got some more updates from there. And again, big week ahead with another joint practice and a second preseason game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So I want to play some solid quotes that sort of explain some stuff. First of all, on the offense and the defense, on both sides of the ball, let's just say that, like, I don't know what you thought, Justin. I thought Brian Daboll's play calling was good. I thought it was creative. I love the screen to Gunnar Helm. I love a lot of the RPO stuff that they mixed in. There was play action early and often. The mesh call on third down that was converted for a first down. None of that's even showing off anything, really. Take a listen to this Robert Saleh quote that is, like, we all know this. We talk about this all the time. It's preseason. Teams are vanilla. But if you forgot for whatever reason, this was a great reminder on just how vanilla they are from Robert Saleh.
On game day, it was probably the most vanilla offense and defense that you're going to get. Trying not to show our hand with regards to what we're capable of on both sides of the ball.
They don't want to show their hand. And I think this applies to more than anyone else. This applies to Carnell Tate, who was used on as the clear out slash decoy, just run a sprint option on like half of his routes that he ran. Somebody posted an all 22 cut up of all of Tate's routes on Twitter. And like almost half of his routes, he's like, he's not going to be a read on the play unless there's a total busted blown coverage. That's not going to be Carnell Tate's role in the regular season. I promise you that. He's not the clear out guy. That's not why they spent the fourth overall pick on him. He's going to be the first read, the primary read on a lot more targets than he was in that preseason game. And I think this is like the epitome of, we don't want to show our hand or what we're capable of on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, what you expect for a preseason game, right? Like, it's, Jeffrey Simmons barely played. John Franklin Myers didn't play. Like, you're not showing anyone what you're doing, especially defensively with Robert Saleh overseeing this scheme. And they did not show what they want to do offensively either, which, again, kind of plays hand in hand with the timing of the offense and Cam Ward in the passing game. I thought the run game functioned pretty all right. Obviously they score a rushing touchdown on the first drive. As disappointing as they were, you alluded to, they go 95, 96 yards and score a touchdown. Tony Pollard gets the ball into the end zone. Tajay Spears makes a couple of explosive plays himself. So, first preseason game, new coaching staff. I wouldn't expect them to go out there and show everything they've got.
Exactly. We're going to do one more quick discussion before I take our first break here. The right guard battle, because Saleh commented on where things stand now, as I did already on today's show, as I did on Friday's show. I have personally declared this battle over and won by Fernando Carmona. Stop the count. There's no need to keep it going. We know Fernando Carmona is going to be the starter in week one, barring some sort of fluky, knock on wood, something happening to him over the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks. But 4 weeks from yesterday, by the way, Titans season starts. So I think Fernando Carmona's got this competition wrapped up. But Robert Saleh was asked, like, where do Cordell Volson and Jackson Slater stand in regards to this competition? And Saleh had this to say about that.
They're still part of the competition. Is Carmona, has he grabbed the inside track? I'd say he has. But at the same time, it's nowhere near over. Carmona's done a great job, like I said, with communicating, playing with great violence, great strain. Is he still a rookie, making rookie mistakes, rookie fundamentals? Sure. But at the same time, he's doing everything he can to, like I said, the last time we spoke, he put his foot in the door and he's doing everything he can to throw his shoulder through it.
Doing everything he can to throw his shoulder through it. I mean, he doesn't want to come out and say anything yet, I think, for the sake of Volson and Slater getting good work in practice. But I think that's a lot of coach speak. And behind closed doors, these guys are probably fist bumping and high-fiving over the fact that they found their starting right guard in the fifth round of this year's draft.
Was my number one takeaway from the preseason game. You asked me about what I thought, and we'll get into it quickly because, again, it's old news, but first, that he got the start, I think, was the first thing that took me by surprise. And then the way that he played, you know, he was quite good on the Tajay Spears explosive run, where Spears created a lot of it himself by kind of getting out of the clutter and reversing course. Like, he was a pulling guard on that play, and he got a he pancaked the defender to the ground. I thought he looked really good. And Pro Football Focus gave him a bunch of praise, too. He's, like, in the 80s for his grades and protection and overall. We got to eat some crow, you and I. Like, we talked about it a bit earlier, but, like, we didn't think he stood a chance. Fifth-round rookie, we didn't think he stood a chance. And a couple of good practices, a really good preseason game, and we're totally reversing conversation. Now, I think this is a you know, there's maybe two prongs to this, and I'm not trying to throw a wet blanket on it, but, like, it's a combination of him being good and I think the other guys being bad, in all honesty. Like, Cordell Volson looked bad in that game, both in protection and as a run blocker. And something you noted, and maybe this doesn't mean a lot, but you look at the depth chart, Jackson Slater is listed as the backup left guard. He's not even listed at right guard. I know preseason depth charts, whatever. But he played every snap, I think, at left guard in the game. Like, he didn't even get a shot at right guard. I know switching, you know, not the end of the world. He could go play right guard in a pinch, not a big deal. But I thought that was interesting, too, that you put those two together. Left guard on the depth chart, only played left guard. I don't think he's in the mix much at all, to be blunt with you at this point. I think it's probably down to Carmona and Volson. And yeah, Hershey, like, Volson's a replacement level player. When they signed him, though, they probably hoped for better. I think they were hoped, maybe we've got something here, you know, change of scenery, former, you know, he was highly touted as a sleeper in the pre-draft process. Like, I think they hoped they had something there, but they don't. They don't. And what a disaster this would be if not for Carmona, right? Like, can you imagine Carmona looked like a fifth-round rookie? This would be a disaster. Now, look, you give Borgonzi credit at the end of the day because his only job is to find a solution for that spot, right? And hopefully, I mean, it's not done yet, but hopefully Carmona's the solution. But what a disaster this would be if he wasn't, right? Like, we'd be probably calling Kevin Zeitler, right? Most likely.
Yeah, I mean, if he looked like what Jackson Slater is, who was a fifth round rookie last year, then that would be, that would be the disaster. But I will say on Slater, like, if he settles in as a swing interior backup guard / center, like, there's worse outcomes for a fifth round pick. Now, we don't know if he can even be a backup at this point, but just saying, like, there are worse, it's a fifth round dart throw on a guard. You hope that some of those you hit, some of them you're going to miss. And hopefully Carmona appears to be the hit. Slater, maybe not a hit as a starter, but could still be a solid depth guy, which is a perfectly valid reason to spend a fifth round pick.
It's a lesson that I try to teach myself every year, and I typically fail. I'm not embarrassed to say it, but, like, I loved Jackson Slater coming out. What the big difference is, to be blunt with you, between that fifth round rookie and this fifth round rookie?
SEC versus tiny school.
Yeah, one comes out of Sac State, and you don't really know what you're going to get. Whereas the other guy's coming out of Arkansas and, you know, played SEC ball, and it's like, yeah, he's ready to go immediately, and the other guy is 2 years in, and you're not really sure what you have yet because the acclimation period is just so much longer. So, yeah, that stuff matters, and it matters a lot, you know, especially throughout the pre-draft.
Yeah. All right, Justin, we're about to take our first break. On the other side of it, I want to talk about the secondary. I want to talk about why Cam Ward having good practices against the Titans secondary doesn't mean that the Titans secondary sucks, and Cam Ward also still sucks because of what we saw in the preseason. But before we do that, some exciting news to announce to the Audible Army. This season, the Music City Audible will be brought to you by Prize Picks.
Indeed, Prize Picks is a great way to make your daily fantasy lineups and player projections more exciting. Football preseason is here, and there's no better place to run your game than Prize Picks, America's number one sports picks app. We've got star players on new teams and a rookie class ready to take over, all while teams look to get started on the biggest football season yet. Make a lineup with player stats, pick game winners, spreads, or totals, and combine your picks in the same lineup, all on Prize Picks, now available in all 50 states, including California, Texas, Georgia, and Florida.
You've got preseason action, Justin, but also Prize Picks has NFL season-long action, which is what I want to talk about today because I have made some picks myself for the season-long action. I like Tony Pollard to go with more than 5 rushing touchdowns this season. I'm taking Cam Ward to throw more than 18.5 passing touchdowns this season. and Jackson Dart to throw less than 3,149.5 passing yards. And I want to explain a little bit why I'm making these picks. Tony Pollard, I think we saw it in the first preseason game, is going to be the goal line back for this offense. I don't think he's going to get all of the goal line carries, but I certainly think the Titans are going to have more scoring opportunities than they had last year when Pollard, I believe, had 5 rushing touchdowns last year. Is that accurate? Yes, he had 5 rushing touchdowns last year. So if he did it last year in last year's offense, I think he can go with more than that number this year. Cam Ward, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, he threw 15 passing touchdowns last year. With Brian Daboll coordinating the offense, I just think the Titans are going to be in scoring position a lot more often. So I'm going with more than 18.5 passing touchdowns for him. If both of these guys stay healthy, and Jackson Dart, I'm going with less passing yards for him because I don't think Jackson Dart is going to stay healthy after seeing him take a trip to the medical tent already in a preseason game. Justin, you like these picks? You hate these picks? What do you think?
I especially like the Tony Pollard pick. I think he will be the Titans goal line back. He's the bigger, more sturdier, you know, option compared to a Tajay Spears. And as you said, Titans offense should be better this year. So I'm definitely including Tony Pollard in some of my lineup projections.
There we go. So right now, Audible Army members can go download the app, the Prize Picks app, today. Use code CLNS to get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app. Use code CLNS. You get $150 instantly in lineups if you win your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, America's number one sports pick app. All right. Audio audience, we'll be right back. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha Steaks because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak because it is steak ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF. BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie, I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie! Welcome back, audio audience. You missed a lot there in the break. Justin, this Titans secondary has been lambasted up and down the social media timeline since Thursday night's game. People went from, wow, we really remade the secondary and the cornerback room and this defense under Saleh, to this is the worst secondary in football. I can't believe they paid so much for Cordell Flott and Alante Taylor sucks too. And like, we did this overnight, essentially. This is the most, I know preseason and August in general is a time for overreacting. This is one of the most extreme overreactions I've ever witnessed from this fan base. I tweeted that Cam Ward bounced back in Saturday's practice and was met with a litany of responses like, who cares? It's against the Titans secondary. Our secondary sucks. It's not real. It doesn't matter. How is that even a bounce back? None of this is real. I am absolutely appalled. I even got a comment in here when I started talking about Ward's bounce back about the fact that it doesn't count because it's against the Titans secondary. Like, do you guys not understand what it means to be learning a new system, to be playing extremely vanilla as it gets, Robert Saleh said, as vanilla as it gets in the preseason against a team that you have not scouted, you have not gone through and figured out their down and distance tendencies, what a different certain formation might indicate. Like, what, in a normal NFL game, the defense has a pretty good idea what's coming at them on, like, 70 to 80% of plays based on film study, down and distance tendencies, formation alignments, all that stuff. The Titans are not doing any of that right now. They're just going out there and freeballing it. They're just playing like, just go play and see what we can do. Now, do the players need to win a few more one-on-one matchups and be better at the catch point and not allow a rookie to make an awesome sideline grab over Cordell Flott? Of course, there are areas that are a little more concerning than just, well, they've never played in this system together and they're not game planning at all. Yeah, a little bit. But most of the issues are that the Titans have never played in this defense. There's a lot of complicated rules, spacing, distribution, coverages that they need to understand. Going up against a play caller who's going to exploit every weakness they have to the maximum degree, which is actually the best way for these guys to learn where their vulnerabilities are. Go against the play caller who's going to exploit every single one of them, and then go watch the film and communicate with your teammates and your coaches and say, okay, I'm starting to understand maybe a little bit better where I'm supposed to be when we get this look and where my teammates are going to be and where I have help and all that stuff. And all of that is not going to be overnight. In fact, I don't think it's going to happen in the next month. But by the time the season starts on September 13th, I think it's going to take a while for the secondary to really understand how they're supposed to play together. Maybe midway through the season, maybe by November, December, we start to see the secondary and the defense really start to like catch their stride and understand what they can really be under Robert Saleh. It is going to be rough for a while. The other side of this is that this defense is designed in a way to give up some yards. They're going to give up the underneath stuff. That's part of the philosophy behind this defense. It's like your epitome of bend, don't break defense. They want to force the offense to go on long drives and not make mistakes in order to score touchdowns. At the end of the day, it's going to be all about keeping teams out of the end zone, which, by the way, they did in the preseason game. They gave up one touchdown and they won. So I'm tired of the overreaction by the fan base. I know it's not going to stop until the games get here and I'm just going to have to live through it for the next month. But Justin, I know you don't feel exactly the same way as me, but surely you can see where I'm coming from with this take.
Yes, I can see where you're coming from. And I think people are overreacting. Where I say that I'm in the middle, listen, you don't know what you don't know. And we don't know anything until the regular season is here, right? For the most part. But I will say that it might be fair to say that we know the first team offense struggled both in the joint practice and the preseason game, right? Wasn't quite in line with what we've heard out of practice. Feels like every day in training, offense won the day today. Got the better of defense, lit them up in the red zone. It seems like they're having a pretty easy time completing passes on this secondary in practice that didn't carry over, you know, to the first time they saw an opponent with the 49ers. And then you got Curtis Rourke going 12 for 14 in that preseason. I mean, some of that stuff was vanilla, but some of it was like Deshaun Stribling. There was a couple where he embarrassed both Taylor and Flott. Like, there was that one, especially near the sideline. That was a freaking number one receiver play on the sideline. They got the better of Flott on that one. So I think Patrick here hit the nail on the head. Like, there needs to be more urgency. Well, we're not out on them. We're not the extreme overreactions that you've been seeing on social media. I do think it'd be a little too biased to say you're not a little worried or concerned. But again, don't know what we don't know. You know, I think a Robert Saleh coach defense obviously relies on its front seven more than anything. And they're probably going to, you look at the talent in the secondary, there's not a shutdown true number one corner.
True.
So they're probably going to count on guys like Jeffrey Simmons, John Franklin Myers, Cedric Gray even, to try to make their lives easier. And if they don't, they could be in for some long afternoons, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think it's fair to be a little concerned without saying this is the worst secondary in the NFL. What the heck are they doing? Why are they paying? We'll see. The games will reveal all. Yeah, but right now it's fair to have questions.
Yeah. I mean, I think they are going to struggle to start the year. You know, Geno Smith's a veteran quarterback. He's in a new system too. But like, I think Garrett Wilson's going to make some plays against this Titan secondary in week one. I think Jalen Hurts also learning a new system. But him and Devonta Smith, they're going to make some plays against the secondary in week two. I would really, in week three, all I want is for Cam to outplay Jackson Dart. I don't even care if the Titans win that game. Just like, I will not be able to deal with the social media reaction if Dart outplays Ward in that game. Even like, even if Ward looks better on the field, but if Dart has better stats, like even that's going to kill me. So I don't want the defense to be struggling by week three. But my realistic expectation for the defense this season is not that they're going to go out and be an elite Robert Saleh unit. Like, it's going to take them some time. And they do still need to add talent at corner. And they do still need to add talent at edge rusher. And that's going to be a focus of next offseason. Right now, they're working with what they've got. They're not the team that's going to go sign Von Miller like the Cowboys apparently are doing or just did or something. I don't know what's going on with Von Miller, but he tweeted about the Cowboys. Officially signed?
Forward to me. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I was like not really following, and I got some random Bleacher Report that's like Von Miller intends to sign with Cowboys. And then it was like Von Miller cryptic social media post about the Cowboys. I never got an alert that was like Von Miller has signed with the Cowboys. Here's the contract, whatever. And then I got another alert that was like, they're also looking at Adoree Jackson after signing a Von Miller. And I'm like, wait, did the Von Miller signing happen? Is it just a rumor? I'm like, what's going on? Anyway, doesn't matter. My point is, that's not what the Titans aren't going to be the team doing that this year, right? So this is the pieces they have to work with. They're going to take time to gel. And by the time, like if we get to the bye week, and we are, when we get past the bye week, I should say, if we're like week 10, week 11, week 12, and the secondary is still getting lit up, then I will officially say these players aren't good enough. They need to try to replace them next year. But
I don't know if it's going to take that long. I hope it doesn't,
but realistically, like, this is a rebuilding team in the first year under a new staff. Like, it's not going to be an overnight success story. I'm sorry. If you're expecting that, your expectations are too high. You need to lower them and just accept where the Titans are in the rebuild. You guys remember the first year the Lions were under Dan Campbell? They won like 5 or 6 games. Like, the Saints last year under Kellen Moore won like 5 or 6
games. I don't think they were worse. They didn't win.
Maybe they were worse than that. So, like, it's like not every turnaround looks like the Patriots or the Jags or the Bears. Like, some of them take a 2 or 3 seasons to find your groove. And I think with the complicated rules that Saleh's coverage are going to play with, it's going to take a little bit of time. Now, hopefully the front four and the front seven in general can speed up that process or make it not as glaring by getting after opposing quarterbacks. You also didn't have John Franklin Myers in this game. Jeff Simmons only played the first series, and Jacob Martin didn't play in this game. So there's a lot of reasons to think that the pass rush can be a lot better than it was. And then you look around the league. I mean, Ty Simpson, 21 of 25. Drew Aller, what did he go, like 10 of 12 or 11 of 13 or something like that? Like, Mendoza went like 10 of 16. Like, preseason defenses don't usually look that good. And quarterbacks complete a high percentage of passes in the preseason. And yeah, that makes it a little more glaring that Cam Ward struggled. But we understand why Cam Ward struggled. And if he completes 1 or 2 more of those passes and dumps it off to Spears instead of taking the stupid intentional grounding penalty, then like, we're looking at Cam's day completely differently as well, just because of a couple of plays that went poorly, right? So the preseason quarterbacks carve up defenses, because defenses aren't game planning to stop those offenses. So that's like the long and the short of it. Now, like, if you want to read a lot into the practices and that Cam Ward is tearing up the secondary in practices, like, there could be a little bit of that not having gelled yet there as well. But I will also say this secondary and this defense has gone up against the Titans offense 10 times now in training camp as of this morning. So they've seen this offense enough to understand the rules, and the fact that Cam Ward's carving them up after 10 practices, to me, is more a sign of Cam Ward than it is a negative thing on the secondary. But we will find out a lot more about where they're at on Friday when the Seahawks come to town for joint practices. That's my long spiel, attempting to make Titans fans feel a little better about where the secondary is, while also acknowledging that they may not be that good to start the season, while also acknowledging that a lot of people are just going to get in the comments and say, no, you're stupid, Cordell Flott sucks, they overpaid him. So, I don't know, well, I have nothing else to say.
The Audible Army's a lot smarter than that. You get that on Twitter, but you're not going to get that here. You might get one or two, but this we got a great audience, and they come here because they know ball, and they know that we know ball. But yeah, on Twitter, it can be accessible.
No doubt. Justin, some injuries. Very unfortunate injuries here as we change topics and get ready to talk about Monday's practice for the last part of this pod. But Jaron Kanick, done for the year, torn pec. He played one snap on Thursday night, Justin. One snap, a special team snap. And Robert Saleh said he like got his arm out and got caught and the pec tore on him. Done for the season. Terrible news for the Titans rookie tight end, who was going to have a little bit of a role, if not a big special teams role, maybe a little bit of a role on offense, but that sucks. And then Jalen Harrell tore his ACL, non-contact injury in like, I think it was in the second half of the game. And you see him immediately, like on, I think it was a screen play or something, immediately just like pull up and start like hopping on one leg and falls to the ground and tore his ACL. He'll be done for the year, which is also really disappointing because he was having a good camp as a depth player in that edge room. He looked good even in the preseason a little in that game before he went down. And so now he'll miss the entire season. Very sad. A big shot to the Titans' depth at edge, where they're not that deep already, but maybe opens the door for somebody else to stand out. Titans did replace these players with some roster moves. But yeah, your thoughts on the injuries?
I had both of them on my 53-man roster projection, my latest one. So I think that's the most notable thing you can say. I don't think we were expecting either one to play huge roles. Kanick, you know, special teams, number four tight end probably. Jalen Harrell I had as the overwhelming favorite to be the number five edge. You got to figure they're at least keeping five edges, and I don't think there's anyone even close to him, so that's a bit of a blow. Remember, he had 4.5 sacks, 5 sacks in his last 5 games last year. Like, he finished the year so strongly, and you were hoping he could build on that this year under Saleh. That's not going to happen. Like you said, it creates some opportunities. Like, I think this probably makes David Martin Robinson a lock at tight end if he wasn't already. If they keep four, then Kylan Granson, maybe he moves ahead of Kanick now. I mean, obviously moves ahead of Kanick. He's not going to play this year. And then at edge, I don't know that they have a five. Like, I thought maybe I was too being, you know, kind Canadian, but I thought Malik Herring looked okay in the preseason game. I thought he looked like he had some juice and explosiveness. So, you know, he's a guy Mike Borgonzi knows well from their shared Kansas City days. Maybe he's the new number five edge. They've got a couple other, you know, Ernest Brown, Truman Jones are on the roster. You know, maybe they look at the waiver wire on cut down day for a number five edge. Although you tend to get, you know, Malik Herring, Ali Gay level players, at that fifth tight, DN spot, if you're going through waivers to, address it. So, but yeah, you know, it could be worse, but yeah, I think they lost two guys who were going to make the 53-man roster in that first preseason game.
Yeah. The Titans have, signed tight end Matt Lauder and running back Dominic Richardson. Just roster churn. I'm not even going to bother to memorize those names, to be honest with you.
That's who replaced Harrell and Kanick after they went on season-ending IR. And then before Monday, they released one of the UDFA linebackers. Was it Sean Brown, I think?
Yep.
Sean Brown waived injured, and they brought in another corner, Corey Mayfield Jr., I believe it was. I don't want to get into this, but how many UDFAs are left? Maybe half of what they signed. Like, they've released a ton of UDFAs already. Not a good UDFA class last year under Mike Borgonzi. Not a good UDFA class this year. Not that I'm trying to start anything with that, but just something I've noted. Two really bad UDFA classes so far.
Interesting. All right, we are going to transition the conversation now. Oh, wait, there was also... Yeah, sorry. Let's transition the conversation.
One more break. Do you want to take a second break?
Yeah, let's take our second break here, and we'll come back and talk about Monday's practice, which has not wrapped up yet. But we have a lot of notes here. An injury scare that's not an injury. But we will cover all of it when we come back. Welcome back. Audio audience, we move on to talk about Monday's practice, which by all accounts was another great day for the offense. It is still happening right now as we begin recapping, so we're going to try to catch it live and update as the later updates come out. I'll start with Teron Davenport's first period notes here. First, it's important to note that Jacob Martin returned to practice after he missed the preseason game and wasn't out there on Saturday. John Franklin Myers, by the way, returned to practice on Saturday and continued practicing today. So good news on the injury front there after we just talked about the bad news. Kalel Mullings, still dealing with a hip pointer, did not practice today. Tony Pollard and Nick Singleton also sitting out practice. Robert Saleh talked about Pollard on Saturday and said that he said he was hoping to get him back today, but also said that he's just giving these guys some rest after a long road trip to San Francisco, long flight back, took some hits in the preseason game, and just want to get these guys just, you know, precautionary to make sure these guys are healthy in a month from now when the season starts. No need to get them too banged up during practice on a Monday ahead of a joint practice. Like, just makes sense. And then they went to work in the low red zone. But do you have any thoughts on these guys sitting or starting?
No, I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. I know some people were worried about the running back situation with Mullings and Pollard. I mean, Pollard is such a veteran. It's not serious. They're essentially sitting him, resting him. If they were playing the Jets tomorrow, I think Tony Pollard suits up, no questions asked. And Trubisky sounds like he got his arm hit or something on one of those plays today. But no, I don't think there's anything overly concerning about, you know, the injuries right now.
Yeah. In the low red zone, Ward threw two touchdown passes. Trubisky came in and threw two touchdown passes, both with three chances to do so. They threw two touchdown passes. Ward hit Spears out of the backfield for a touchdown, and then Tate in the back of the end zone as well. And then the second team played a bit. I'm not even going to talk about Trubisky and Levis, whatever, who cares. Jeffrey Simmons had a sack. Cedric Gray had a nice hit in the hole on Tajay Spears. And then the team started working some two-minute stuff, right? That's where we're at now. That's like, I think it's literally happening right now, the two-minute stuff. And again, trying to like read it as it's happening live. But in a two-minute drill, Cam Ward hits Carnell Tate on 4th and 8 for a conversion. Tate took a big hit, was a bit slow to get up, and walked on his own power to the sideline with a trainer. But apparently he is doing
Jr.,
okay.
By the way, second time he's done it this camp.
He talked about how you don't want to hit guys in camp, hurt your teammates, talked about that on Saturday, but then also said like it's tough to like go back and forth from going live in a game mode to going to practice where you don't want to hurt your teammates mode. But the two-minute drill ultimately came up empty because Jermaine Johnson got immediate pressure to force a throw that was well defended by Alante Taylor on 4th and goal. And Carnell Tate seems to be okay. So 2 minute, they drive all the way down. They go for it on 4th and goal. And Jermaine Johnson comes up with a huge pressure to force a quick throw that was well defended. That's the kind of back and forth we want to see from this offense and defense. Offense marching down the field in the 2 minute, big conversions. And then the defense stepping up with the front four, getting the pressure to force the quick throw. So it doesn't even matter if the coverage is there or not. The coverage was there. Titans offense comes up empty in the 2 minute drill. Again, this is one of those things in training camp where it's like, yeah, but the defense got to stop in the two-minute drill. So are we happy about that, or are we upset about the offense? It's always a nice tug back and forth.
Glass half full or not. Speaking of Jermaine Johnson, sorry, who just made that big play there. I thought he looked good, too, on Thursday.
Yeah.
I thought he blew up a run early. I think him and Cody Barton teamed up to blow up a run. Jermaine Johnson might be, probably will be the best edge on this team. So nice to see him come up with a big play there. And you also like to see, of course, Cam Ward and Carnell Tate connecting on that fourth down there in the 2 minute drill.
Yep. Carmona got a lot of first team reps at right guard again, and Austin Schlotman continues to start at center. This from
surprise, surprise.
Davenport. Yeah. I mean, it's over. Let's just be real. It's over. The thing is over. On 3rd and long, Ward hit Wandale Robinson to make it 4th and 8. And that was when Tate converted the 4th and 8. Apparently, according to TD, it was a bomb to Tate that Tate dove to catch and got hit by Kevin Winston Jr. as he came down with it. And on the next play, Ian Manor came in for Tate and drew a defensive pass interference on Cordell Flott. So if you're worried about the secondary, no reason to stop being worried now. Might as well keep on worrying if that's what you want to do, if that's how you want to be if that's how you want to live your life, just be a worrier and like about things you can't control. Right. Like, I don't know. That's how I feel.
You're really pissed about the whole secondary stuff on social media. I can tell. Yeah. Good one here from Ray School. Like, especially without Jalen Harrell, Johnson Falk, they all did look good. And Keldrick Falk. I mean, we don't talk about it. We're talking about Cardinal Tate. They got a second first round rookie. We sometimes forget about, he blew up. That was a tight end, I think, blocking him. He blew up that tight end on that run play in that preseason game. He looked like a grown man. He looked like an NFL caliber, pro ready D line. I mean, he's big. He's long. He looked really good on that one.
Yeah.
And Femi had a nice play too in the preseason.
Yeah, unblocked into the backfield. I said it on Friday, Justin. Femi Oladejo unblocked is the best defender in the league. Like, all of the plays he's ever made in his career were unblocked. But Keldrick Falk flashed an inside spin move on one play to get quick pressure and force a bad throw. Like, he looks like he's developing nicely and has developed a lot since Titans drafted him. We'll see how much of an impact he has when the real bullets start flying against starting offensive linemen, but you can see it coming along for Falk, and I think that's a really good sign. Emil Wagner apparently had a good block on a run for the second or third team today. There was some questions last week about how Emil Wagner's doing, and I was like, I don't know, I haven't seen him play yet because we aren't at practice. This was before the preseason game, but there's your Emil Wagner note if you wanted it. Jermaine Johnson had another sack, by the way, earlier in that 2 minute period, which is what forced the third and long, which is what led to the Wandale catch, which is what led to the Tate catch. So we're putting in all the pieces together live in real time here as we read these reports coming out of training camp. But Jermaine Johnson had a sack on the 2 minute drive. Titans able to convert. Then Jermaine Johnson has the pressure to end the 2 minute drive. How about Jermaine Johnson? He's cooking Dan Moore, which, you know, again, read this glass half full or glass half empty, but it's good to see Jermaine Johnson cooking out there.
Correct, Gary. Emil Wagner is the Notre Dame kid, the UDFA tackle, who we haven't heard much from this summer, in all honesty. And seems like he's been working, even the preseason game. What, did he work with the third stringers, I think? Because it was Austin Deculus and Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon who were out there as the second string tackles. And that's been the case all summer long. Which, by the way, don't get me started on that drum, because Deculus was horrible in that game. I'll continue to beat the drum of the swing tackle spot. Although Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon looked all right and also graded out quite nicely at through PFF. Can he play left tackle? They seem to be using him, you know, I don't want to say exclusively on the right, but more frequently on the right than the left. He has had some reps on the left, but do they trust him enough to be the number three? Or do they still have to go out and get a tackle?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think based on one preseason game, which again, we're trying not to overreact too much to, but Justin, here's some trivia for you in the audience. Comment if you think you know the answer. Who was the highest graded Titans offensive lineman in pass blocking according to PFF in this game?
Oh, I was either, I don't know. Was it Dixon? I looked this up and I don't remember. It was either Dixon, Carmona, or Latham. I had three answers.
Those were the top three.
Yeah.
Those were the top three. Carmona was first. Dixon was second. Latham was third. Those are your three highest graded pass blockers for the Titans in this game. Overall offense grades, do you know who the top three were?
Still those guys, maybe?
Latham first, Carmona second. How about the right side of the starting offensive line? And actually, for some reason, and this is why we always take this stuff with a grain of salt, maybe this, you know, undoes everything that I just said. For some reason, Cordell Volson was the third highest graded offensive player for the Titans. Now, that's overall offense grade.
Right.
His pass blocking grade was the fourth worst out of all.
But he also got blown up on a run play, if I recall correctly. I want to say he got maybe a blow. I think he got blown up on a run play.
I thought he did too. Austin Deculus, though, 19.0 pass blocking grade per PFF, which is like as bad as it gets. Emil Wagner played two snaps in the preseason game. Both of them were run plays. So we didn't even get to see him in pass pro in the preseason game.
Not a great
time,
though.
I didn't notice him.
Way low down the pecking order. I mean, who's the other tackle? Zachary Thomas, I think, was in the game at the end there at offensive tackle. But yeah, probably not a good sign for Emil Wagner. And I can't wait to answer the question later. I started about the UDFA class. Some of you came at me protecting Mike Borgonzi a little bit. I'm going to get to that after. But I will say the Latham Carmona stuff, you want to take some heat off Cam Ward, make life easy. I have a feeling they're going to have some success running the ball up that right side. I mean, they're tough, big, physical, nasty, couple SEC linemen. I think they're going to have success running the ball up that right side.
I think so, too. I think they're going to have success running the ball. I think this is going to be a good run blocking line. Pass protection might still be an issue at times, especially on the edges, especially on Dan Moore's edge. But, you know, if J.C. Latham gets his stuff together, you can help Dan Moore and rely on J.C. Latham on the right, hopefully. You got Peter Skoronski on the left. You know, Dan Moore's a good run blocker, even if he struggles a bit sometimes with speed rushers. I think the O-line's going to be better than people think, especially in run blocking. I do think the pass protection is going to come along slowly, and there's going to be plays where they get totally blown up immediately, just like we've been seeing for 5 years here. But I think it's going to be better than the expectation. And I do think Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon is winning the swing tackle job right now. I still want them to go sign somebody. And again, the closer we get to September 13th without any movement here is definitely interesting. But we'll see what happens. Also, by the way, Titans worked out Daquan Jones. Nothing happening there yet, but that's interesting.
I mean, bring him. I love Daquan Jones. That'd be fun. I said on Twitter, I don't think they need him. I mean, they got good depth at D tackle, but I would take him back. I mean, I love Daquan Jones. Absolutely. You want to talk about the Nazi Johnson situation? Because I know you started something earlier. We talked about all the transactions.
Yeah, so let's move to the live chat Q&A portion of this program and start with that. Nazi Johnson, one of the DBs that Mike Borgonzi brought in a week or two ago when he was churning the back end of that depth chart, was suspended for 6 games for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy of the NFL. He tweeted about his situation over the weekend and said that he and his wife have been trying to get pregnant, having some issues with fertility, so they started taking some supplements to help with that. And apparently, something in one of the supplements that he took is on the list of banned substances for the NFL. Seems like a totally ridiculous thing to get suspended for, and I don't mean that he's dumb. I mean the NFL's dumb. Like, sure, he's got to closely read the label and maybe like send the list of ingredients to an agent or somebody that can get back to him and say, no, you actually can't take this. But I mean, put yourself in his position. If you're trying to get pregnant with your wife, that's probably your top priority in life is your family. And you're trying to do everything you can. You probably don't even think that like, oh, this might be on the list of NFL banned substances because it's not like a workout protein, creatine, nonsensical thing. It's like a fertility supplement. So the fact that he got suspended for this is really sad. A guy who's fighting for a roster spot, even if he makes the team, is now going to lose 6 weeks worth of game checks, which is a third of his pay for the season on a low salary already. And then it might even cause him to not make the team because he's going to be useless to them for 6 weeks. So I don't know. I feel for Nazi Johnson quite a bit here.
I feel for him. I'll play bad cop. I didn't even tell you this. I had a conversation about this morning with someone I trust immensely, about this situation. I had a phone conversation and I mean, you kind of said it, but at the end of the day, every NFL player is responsible for what they put in their bodies. And in every locker room in the NFL, every single one, there's a sign with a phone number. Call, check. Can I take this or not? I don't think due diligence was done in this situation. And at the end of the day, you've got to do your due diligence. It is what it is. I don't think the campaign, if you know they're putting out statements, I don't think it helps. Maybe in the court of public opinion, but you're not going to win against the NFL this way, right? Like they don't care.
No, I agree.
You've got all the resources at your disposal that you could possibly need. It's on you to make sure you've got all the information at your fingertips. And maybe I don't know if that happened or not. I'm not going to say it did or didn't, but I don't know that that happened.
Well, he did tweet and say it's just a reminder that you really got to check on what you're putting in your body. And like, obviously, I mean, I'm assuming that he didn't even think to check on this because, again, it wasn't a workout supplement. But any supplement, you got to check. I do agree. It's on him to do that checking. It just sucks that this circumstance has happened. We got a question for you specifically from Lauren Sebring. Mello, who was your favorite rookie performance in the preseason game? Before you answer, we got a live update here from Robert Saleh on Carnell Tate. Took a hit toward the end of practice. Said he's not concerned, walked away on his own, maybe was a little dizzy. I think he probably got the wind knocked out of him, but he's okay. Trubisky is being evaluated for a bicep. That could be serious. That could open the door for Will Levis to be this team's backup quarterback.
Well, we'll follow along closely there. I think, I mean, the easy answer has got to be Carmona, right? Like, it obviously, it wasn't Tate who didn't have any catches. It wasn't Falk who didn't do much. It wasn't Nick Singleton who got blown up in pass pro, which, by the way, really going to hurt his chances of getting on the field. It wasn't Coogan. I mean, the only answer, it wasn't Kanick. The only answer here really is Carmona, and it wasn't close in all honesty, right? Like, he played well. Stranglehold on the right guard job. Easy answer, Fernando Carmona, who, by the way, I wasn't super high on coming out. Like, I wanted the Titans, and when the Titans made that pick, I wasn't, you know, overly thrilled about it. So love that, and I hope it's, you know, proven me wrong. So far, so good.
Yeah. This one, I guess you starred from Jay Turn. We went from begging for Zeitler to desperately needing a starting center, not to mention the backup tackle spot is still in ruins.
I might have started because I don't know where Sloatman wasn't bad, and I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, desperately needing a starting center is a very interesting way to put it. I mean, maybe you somewhat mildly need a
solution, need a
long-term,
future solution.
Yeah. A long-term answer, but you don't desperately need a starting center. Austin Schlotman is your starting center. He knows the scheme like the back of his hand. He can help get everybody lined up, get all the protection calls in, and make sure everybody's where they're supposed to be. And as I told you in the audience a month or two ago, like, if your center is your weak link on the offensive line when it comes to pass protection and run blocking, you can live with that if they are highly intelligent and helping get everybody lined up and set the right way. You can always help the center. You can help double team off the line of scrimmage. He's the guy that the guards are helping the most. When you see somebody get de-cleated as a pass rusher by a guard looking for work, it's usually because they're helping the center. Occasionally, they're helping a tackle, but usually they're coming back and helping the center out. So, I mean, I'm not worried about Schlotman. Like, if I'm worried about anybody, it's like I'm worried about Dan Moore against speed rushers. I'm worried about J.C. Latham's, like, effort through the whistle on a consistent basis. I'm worried about Fernando Carmona being a rookie going up against not a backup defensive line. Like, apparently Jeffrey Simmons on Saturday worked Carmona for a sack. Now, Jeffrey Simmons works guys. That's part of what he does. So it's not like that glaring of an issue, but, you know, Carmona is going to face a lot of good interior rushers this year if he becomes a starting right guard, which it looks like he's going to be. So yeah, there are some concerns. Austin Schlotman is like fourth or fifth on my list, though. I mean, I guess Peter Skoronski's fifth on my list, but Schlotman's fourth. You know, like, I'm not that worried about him.
I would probably, I mean, I guess, I mean, Latham, I think, is the better player than Schlotman, but anyway.
I agree, but it's just because of the inconsistencies we've seen, you know.
The Spears look like he's put some muscle on, or am I seeing things? Well, I'm not sure that I'm going to comment on how he looks body-wise, although it'd be very much in line with MCA lately. I started this because he looks really good, doesn't he, in general, right? Like, that explosive run the other day. I mean, you go back to OTAs, now in camp, like, every day they're singing Tajay Spears praises. Cam Ward hit him for a touchdown today at practice today, yep, out of the back. So then hit him again for a checkdown on the very next play. Like, Tajay Spears looks so good. Who was it? The underdog guy tweeted at you. Josh Norris, right? Like, 50-50 split in the first preseason game. The sky appears to be the limit for Spears this year. I do think if he's healthy, they're going to work him in a lot.
Yeah,
knock on
I think
wood
he's going to be a big factor.
Tajay Spears' health.
I think he's going to be a big factor in the passing game. He's going to help create explosives on the ground, but he has got to stay healthy. None of it matters if he can't stay healthy, and we aren't going to know if he's able to stay healthy until we get to the end of the season and he stayed healthy. So, like, every time we talk about him, unfortunately, because of the ways the first 3 years of his career have gone, we got to throw that caveat in there that, like, it's a big if for him to stay healthy. But hopefully he can give him 13, 14 good games this year. You know, if he's like out 1 week with a twisted ankle, you can live with that, I guess. We'll see what happens with him next offseason. All right, it's time for you to respond to the people. Patrick, what makes a good UDFA class, Mello? Roster grids, I don't think there are many good UDFA classes, to be honest. Most teams keep one or two at most on their 53. Patrick, that's kind of the point of my question. Curious why Mello thinks these last two classes are very bad. The floor is yours.
Well, and I know you guys weren't coming at me. I joked about that earlier. But, okay, is there one UDFA this year you're attached to? Is there one UDFA that you think is going to make this 53-man roster? Is there one UDFA that you're excited about right now? No, none of them, not one. And this is a rebuilding roster. It should be easier for them to keep a UDFA. They've cut half of them already, essentially. Like, does Emil Wagner make it? I don't think so. Who's left? Rashid Miller? No, I don't think so. Jalen McMurray, no, I don't think so. I think there might be one line. They signed a bunch of linebackers. I think only one of them is left. Manny Powell, no, I don't think so. I don't, like, who are we excited? Bishop Fitzgerald? No, I don't think he makes it either. So then what makes a good UDFA class? I mean, I know we're not comparing GMs here. I don't want anyone to get carried away. But John, Aaron Brewer, Tier Tart, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Have the Titans had one of those guys yet? No, they haven't. And so, yeah, you talk about UDFAs. Every team tends to keep one or two. I don't think the Titans keep a single one this year. And who did they have last year? It was a really bad class last year, too. I think Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon is the one they kept. But it was so clear they only, not because he, necessarily, they just didn't want to expose him to waivers, right? They didn't play him. He wasn't Tier Tart. He wasn't Aaron Brewer, now one of the highest paid centers in the NFL. So, yeah, I think this UDFA class right now is really bad this year because, again, this is a rebuilding roster. It shouldn't be that hard for one of these guys to make it. And, look, maybe they end up keeping one and I'm wrong, but would you bet on any of them right now? I don't think they're going to keep any of them.
I don't think they will. Bishop Fitzgerald played 19 snaps in the Thursday's preseason game, 15 of them in coverage, 4 in run defense. He had an 80.7 tackling grade, a 67.7 overall grade. He had 2 assisted tackles and no other stat, no catches allowed, no solo tackles. So, I mean, he was mostly invisible and quiet, which I don't know what to make of that from a safety perspective. You kind of want those guys around the ball. But yeah,
when people ask me about good UDFA, like I think of trying to find a Nick Westbrook or trying to find a Tier Tart or find an Aaron Brewer, right? Like, I think that's fair. And they haven't come anywhere close yet, in my opinion, to finding one of those guys. And like, I see a lot of shouts for Xavier Restrepo. They didn't keep him last year. They're not going to probably not keep him this year either. He's looking like a practice squad receiver. I mean, a lot of attachment to Xavier Restrepo in this fan base, but he's not an answer to they don't have bad UDFA classes. They have Xavier Restrepo. He's probably a practice squad receiver.
I do think a UDFA from last year is going to make this roster, and we just talked about him. Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon is going to be your swing tackle unless they sign somebody. So that's a pretty big hit, but finding a depth tackle option as a UDFA, tackles are typically a position you got to draft on day one, if not day two, if not day one. So that's one, but I agree with you overall. Like, 1 in 2 years is not a high hit rate. Like, Vrabel's teams and John Robinson as GM, not to praise John Robinson because that's blasphemous around these parts, he was finding 2 or 3 a year, it felt like.
Yeah, they were hitting consistently under that. So that's I just think they got to do a slightly better than they've done. That's all.
All right, Justin, we're going to close the show out with a couple of super chats, and then we will see you guys tomorrow. There's no practice tomorrow, so we can go deeper on what Sala is saying right now, which, by the way, he said Fernando Carmona will start this week. He also said Carmona will continue to get first dibs on starting right guard until further notice, as tweeted by A to Z Sports Nashville. So that's a little bit more strongly put than Saturday's quote that we played on this show where he said that it's still a competition. So we'll see what happens there. But a couple super chats, and then we say goodbye.
And I want to answer the Gary Soto follow-up question about the UDFA.
Okay.
I've got an answer.
Let's do that. Nash Russ, $10. I'll super chat. Second time in one show. Appreciate you very much.
Second time in one show, Nash Russ. Jeez, thank you so much.
And then we got Justin.
You've
got
to hit the... You know, hit the thing.
This was revealed on Thursday's show last week. Lemdaz is Lem... from Pressman Coverage, the host of this podcast, who was on the show on Thursday.
Wow. I had no idea.
Revealed that he's such an Audible Army member that he's getting in on the Super Chat action. Thank you, Lem. We very much appreciate it. You guys go check out Pressman Coverage with Austin Stanley, I think just dropped this morning, in studio there. So go watch that after you're done with this stream.
I've heard a lot of praise for these guys. I hope to get with them at some point, too. You know, obviously, you did it while I was in Portugal, so... Shout out to them, man. Good job.
Kicked you off the show, and we're gonna start the PMCA pod, me and the Pressman Coverage guys. So see you, Melo. Sorry, I know we just booked this big Prize Picks sponsorship, but it's like, I don't know what to do, man. Anyway, Lem says, which of the available free agent tackles do you think would accept the swing role? I hear Decker a lot, but don't think he would come be a backup. Thoughts?
Well, I agree with him. I do think Decker's probably waiting for a starting opportunity. He's like a top 20 left tackle in the NFL. So, and I think, you know, if someone gets hurt, Taylor Decker will be signed within an hour if that happens anywhere across the league. So I think more of like your Jack Conklins, your Cam Robinsons, who probably can't realistically hope for a starting gig at this point. But I agree, like Decker has got to be. I think Decker is a full-blown NFL starter. I don't think Conklin or Robinson are that at this point. And they probably can't be as choosy as Decker can be. So, yeah, those two names are still on my radar.
I'll throw a couple thoughts in, and then we'll get to Gary's question. Jay Turn would really like to see Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon be the second backup tackle after they bring someone more dependable in. He still feels slightly above pure project level, not quite reliable backup. Totally agree. I hope they do something, but there's no telling whether they will or not. And this is back at you, Justin. Maybe Borgonzi's actual draft picks are so good, there's no room for UDFAs.
That's fair. That's fair to question. Look, last year he had just came in, right? And that's tough when you're compiling a UDFA class in your first year with some of the scouts that you probably don't want there, but you can't get rid of them until after the draft. So there are some challenges there. This is a great question from Gary. Do you think Titans roster has better depth now? That's the reason why UDFAs aren't making the team. There is a reason, and of course, no disrespect to Gary, and no disrespect to any. So a couple of you agreed with him. The reason I'm not accepting this as an answer is, look at some of the UDFAs that we thought might make the team and who they're competing against. If Bishop Fitzgerald doesn't make the team, it's because he lost to either Kendall Brooks, Eric Hallett, or Jarek Reed. If Emil Wagner or Rashid Miller don't make the team, it's because they lost out to Austin Deculus, a second-year UDFA, and Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon. Is that good enough depth to say a UDFA didn't have a chance to make the team? Absolutely not. They signed three corners in undrafted free agency, and all they've done since then is sign seven more corners because they're not happy with how those guys are. They've brought in Derek Canteen, Mario Goodrich, Nazee Johnson. They brought in a guy yesterday, Corey Mayfield, and they're dissatisfied with the corner depth. So there was a lot of opportunity for some of these UDFAs to make the team. They're just not going to do it because they haven't been good enough. And they're going to lose out to a Kendall Brooks or a whoever, a Micah Robinson. So no, I don't think that's a good enough reason.
And I don't think the depth is that good on this roster, to be frank.
It's not.
I think they have
rebuilding.
A deep. Yeah, they have a deep defensive tackle room, but even then they're still working out Daquan Jones. They have a pretty deep wide receiver room, but still mostly unproven. I mean, second-year guys and a rookie are three-fifths of your depth there. And then the rest of the team, like, we're talking about Cordell Volson. If he has to play, I don't know if these are the – so roster
I don't agree with Ron. Yeah, I don't agree with him here because you picked out the only position groups on their roster without depth. No, they only signed 11 UDFAs. Three of them were corners. I'm picking out the guys they signed. They signed two linemen. That's half. They signed three linebackers. That's all the UDFAs, essentially, right? Outside the receivers who aren't going to make it either, most likely. So you can't say that I picked out. No, I picked out what they signed. They went to get corners. They went to get linemen. They went to get linebackers. That's what they did. I didn't decide it.
And the linebacker group does have some depth. So that's a tough position because, you know,
for
James Williams has emerged.
Sure.
Anthony Hill's playing well. They signed multiple guys in free agency before they ever got to UDFAs. So, like, that is one of the deeper groups, and I'll agree with that. But I don't think corner is particularly deep. I mean, you got four guys that you might feel okay to good about, but none of them are stars. In Alante Taylor, Cordell Flott, Marcus Harris, and Joshua Williams, three of those guys were brought in this offseason. So they're all competing for a role on this team. I don't think the edge group has a lot of depth, especially after Jalen Harrell's injury. I think you can argue tight end has depth, but like that would mean
but
that you think David Martin Robinson is an NFL starting player and who's been relegated to third string. You know, like,
but the point
is David Martin Robinson that good?
Yeah, we felt good about the linebacker depth, and we like going in. So it was weird they signed so many UDFA linebackers, but we did not feel good about corner, safety, or tackle. Three spots where they signed UDFAs, and I don't think a single one of them is going to make the roster, and they're going to lose out to guys who are you know back end churn worthy.
And thesaurus UDFA discussion popping off. I will say, if you guys want to remember what good depth looks like, The Titans got the one seed in 2021 with the most injuries in the NFL. That's what having good depth looks like. And they did back then, but that was 5 years ago or six seasons ago. And they don't have that kind of depth anymore. Like you said, they're still rebuilding. They can't even afford to like invest in a kicker. They just got to pray that Joey Sly figures his stuff out, which he appears to be doing. By the way, last note from practice today from Teron Davenport is that Joey Sly made all his kicks. Let me see if I can find the tweet quickly here. Now the press conferences have started, so it's just like all tweets about press conferences. Give me one second. I'm going to tell you what Joey Sly did today, and then we'll close out the show because I got to get started.
Yeah, Wandell Robinson's been speaking at the podium, and now it's Jermaine Johnson.
Right. Joey Sly, good from 30, 35, 40, 44, 45, 46, and 50. The 50-yarder doinked in high off the post, but doinked in, which is notable. Talked a lot about him on Friday, Justin, that Joey Sly, super impressive.
Yeah, he needed that after they worked out a bunch of kickers, right? How about this tweet from Terry McCormick? Salah said Josh Williams is long and lean, playing well, and is definitely an NFL corner. And then Terry says, my observation, not Salah's quote, but he's been better to me than Flott as of late. Really interesting observation there from Terry with Josh Williams kind of getting back. Still been wearing the yellow jersey, the non-contact. He popped someone, was it at Saturday's practice, apparently?
Yeah.
And one of his teammates yelled at him, take the yellow jersey off, dog, kind of hinting you're hiding behind it. You're hitting someone. But that sounded like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it for this episode. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us for over 70 minutes. Remember, the show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Use code CLNS to get $150 in lineups when you win your first $5 play. All right, Justin, we're wrapping up the show. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Probably not going live tomorrow. There's no practice tomorrow. They are practicing on Wednesday. No practice Thursday. Joint practice Friday with the Seahawks. Friday, I'm flying to Las Vegas to do a little annual weekend trip there with my wife. So I don't know what you want to do, Justin. Probably just recap joint practice and game together on Monday, unless you want to like wait around on Friday to recap a joint practice by yourself or get a guest or something. I mean, we can talk about this off air, but why? We can talk about it on air. So why would we do it off air? You know what I mean?
We let everyone in a peek into the Audible Army process, the MCA. Yeah, we'll figure it out. I mean, I guess joint practice won't have wrapped up yet by the time that you've got to head to the airport. So we'll figure that out, but yeah, appreciate you, and we'll figure it out. But yes, we'll be back tomorrow. Talk all things Tennessee Titans football. Hit the like button, as Gary Soto says. Shout out to Gary Soto. Shout out to the entire Audible Army. Updates coming by the end of the week on the Discord. I know you guys asked about that earlier today. Put Gary in the chair, the source says. Maybe me and Gary Soto will host Friday's live stream episode. We'll figure it out.
I'll be here for Friday's 10:30 a.m. live stream. But if you wanted to do a second show to recap joint practice, that's where Gary could fill my seat.
That's where Gary could sit in the chair. We'll figure it out. Until then, we'll be back tomorrow talking all things football. All things Titans football. Wait till the stream ends. Drop a comment below. It helps get us in the algorithm. Like the show. Till tomorrow, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.